the maiden flight of the second Dreamliner is not without drama. The first Chinook Mark III has been delivered to Britain's RAF, and Cold Warriors might be shocked at this collaboration. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, December 23, 2009. Boeing's second 787 Dreamliner made its first flight yesterday, and unlike the maiden flight of the first test aircraft, there was a bit of drama associated with the flight of ZA-002. The plane departed Payne Field in Everett, Washington, completed a two-hour flight, and landed at Boeing Field in Seattle. But the Seattle Times reports a ham radio operator monitoring the frequency used for the flight overheard the crews of the T-33 chase planes noticing the gear was tilted to the aft by 15 degrees. Captain Randy Neville, who was at the controls, did a go-around, and an Aero News reader reported the plane then landed with the gear door hanging down, suggesting the nose gear had been lowered manually. Boeing spokeswoman Yvonne Leach emphasized afterward, quote, "At no time during this flight was the aircraft or the pilots in danger," unquote. This second test aircraft wears the colors of All Nippon Airways, the Dreamliner's first customer. Boeing confirmed on Monday that the first Chinook Mark III helicopter has been delivered to the UK's Royal Air Force. The delivery was reportedly ahead of schedule, and RAF declared initial operational capability for the Mark III, releasing the aircraft to begin support in locations including Afghanistan. A team led by Boeing's UK rotorcraft support business converted the aircraft to a cockpit standard coherent with the rest of the UK Chinook fleet, and also installed several modifications to increase the aircraft's capability. A total of 8 UK Chinooks will be converted to the fleet standard. The remaining 7 are on schedule for delivery this month and after the first of the year. You wouldn't have been hearing news like this during the Cold War. Russian-based Irkut Corporation, part of the United Aircraft Corporation, will develop a family of single-aisle aircraft called the MC-21, starting shortly after the first of the year. The planes will be equipped with Rockwell Collins avionics. Rockwell will provide engineering support and a suite of avionics and pilot controls, including comm, nav, and surveillance systems, electronic flight bags and docking stations, an avionics Ethernet switch and configuration tools, side stick controls, a rudder and brake pedal system, flap and slat and speed brake control lever modules, and a trim control panel. Once development is complete, the MC-21 will be built in Irkutsk, Russia, and is projected to enter service in 2016. Up next on ANN, senators want answers on why terrorists can keep their U.S. pilot certificates. Members of the House tell the administration don't reward illegal subsidies that cost U.S. jobs. And the surge in Afghanistan includes more UAVs, too. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 23rd. I'm Paul Plack. Some prominent members of the U.S. Senate's Transportation Committee have written a bipartisan letter to the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security regarding recent reports of individuals with connections to terrorism or criminal activities holding valid airman certificates issued by the FAA. A series of exposés conducted in the past few months by ABC News with the help of Safe Banking Systems revealed that terrorism suspects and convicts, drug lords, and a dozen people named Bin Laden hold valid FAA pilot certificates. Democrats Jay Rockefeller and Byron Dorgan, and Republicans K. Bailey Hutchinson and Jim DeMint, observe in the letter, quote, "We are aware that FAA and TSA have recently implemented a new vetting procedure that may correct many of the earlier shortcomings, but we still have concerns about the effectiveness of this process," unquote. The letter goes on through a series of possibly rhetorical questions which hint at curiosity about why a small data mining company, using public records, can find these oversights and TSA with all its billions can't. Maybe the small data mining company isn't completely absorbed with the task of confiscating shampoo. You know, I would be totally unsuited for the Senate. Over in the U.S. House, they know how to write bipartisan letters to the White House, too. One written by Republican Todd Tiert of Kansas and Democrat Norm Dix of Washington has been signed by 123 additional lawmakers and contends that U.S. policies should not reward foreign governments or companies that have benefited from illegal subsidies, mentioning specifically the charge before the WTO that European governments have provided loans to Airbus without requiring repayment. The letter urges, quote, "It is imperative that federal government policies work to ensure a level playing field, allowing U.S. businesses to be competitive in the global economy. These policies should enable further development of the skills and capacity of the American workforce and create jobs here at home. Our policies should not reward foreign governments or companies that benefited from illegal subsidies," unquote. Not surprisingly, Boeing is delighted with the letter. European governments have filed a similar complaint against the U.S., of course, charging that Boeing has accepted tax breaks and other incentives to influence decisions on locations of new production facilities. That one's going to be interesting moral ground, because Airbus accepted a reported $120 million in incentives to choose Mobile, Alabama, as the site for conversion and finishing work on its proposed KC-45 aerial tanker for the U.S. Air Force. Along with more human troops headed to Afghanistan as part of the surge strategy, the U.S. will be sending more unmanned aerial vehicles. The Associated Press quotes Air Force Lieutenant General David Deptula in reporting air capabilities will be expanded over the next 8 months, using technology including the MQ-9 Reaper, and that there will also be many roles for the smaller Raven unmanned system. Deptula is reporting that the Air Force will be using its new Beast of Kandahar. That's a UAV that looks something like a B-2 bomber, and by late summer will deploy the Gorgon Stare system in Afghanistan. That surveillance system can cover an estimated 2.5 square miles and send as many as 10 different video streams to 10 different ground stations simultaneously for worldwide distribution to military analysts. Still ahead, aerospace has been hit hard, but there are still jobs in Georgia. Venezuela's president has a brain fart on national TV. And if you think you're too old for skydiving, you gotta hear this. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, December 23rd. I'm Paul Plack. Despite the high-profile announcement of Cessna's intent to close down its new plant in Columbus, Georgia, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports there could be worse places to live if you work in aerospace. The paper reports that while some aviation sectors have been hit hard, overall aerospace employment in Georgia has dipped only slightly in 2009. Military aircraft manufacturing has been strong due to international orders, including C-130s being built for Australia, Italy, Britain, and others. The Lockheed Martin plant in Marietta, where the plane is built, has increased employment by about 600 jobs this year, despite the pending end of the F-22 program in 2011. Lori Leshin has been named the new Deputy Associate Administrator of the Exploration Systems Mission Directorate at NASA headquarters. She starts her new job next month. She previously served as the Deputy Center Director for Science and Technology at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. Before coming to NASA, Leshin received the agency's Distinguished Public Service Medal. That's the highest award for non-NASA personnel. The International Astronomical Union has recognized her contributions to planetary science with the naming of the asteroid 4922 Leshin. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has a real hard spot in his heart for the United States and has taken offense at the fact that a major tourist attraction in his country, Angel Falls, is named after U.S. aviator Jimmy Angel, who saw the falls from the air in the 1930s. It's borne his name ever since. The waterfall has a vertical drop of about a kilometer from a mesa in the northern part of Venezuela. The indigenous people in the area, called Paymans, obviously knew about the falls for many years before it was seen by Jimmy Angel. Chavez wants the name restored to what the Paymans called it, Carapacupai Maru. The BBC reports Chavez used his weekly national TV address to ask his countrymen why they would accept a name that implies, quote, "the highest waterfall in the world was discovered by a man who came from the United States in a plane," unquote. But he then proceeded to demonstrate one possible answer to his own question. Chavez found himself unable to pronounce the traditional name on live TV, had to be helped by his daughter, then reportedly spent several minutes saying the name over and over, all while still on camera. And finally today, it was a big deal when President George H.W. Bush went skydiving to celebrate his 85th birthday back in July. But suddenly, that doesn't look that remarkable anymore. 27-year-old Brazilian Josivaldo Vaz dos Santos convinced his 100-year-old grandmother, Aida dos Santos, that skydiving would be great fun. He made the arrangements for her as a combination birthday and Christmas present. On Saturday, she went for the first time, enjoying a free fall lasting about 9 seconds from an altitude of about 9,700 feet. Now, she says she wants to do it again. You know, I'm going to take a wild guess here. Josivaldo is listed as a beneficiary in his grandmother's last will and testament. That's the latest from Aero News. Just a guess. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, more of our look back at 10 years of ANN with Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell, starting with the Columbia disaster in 2003. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.